From the headquarters of the American Radio Relay League in Newington, Connecticut, this is ARRL, The Doctor Is In, a bi-weekly podcast addressing common and some not-so-common technical issues in amateur radio. This podcast is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. And now, here's your host, QST Editor-in-Chief Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and the Doctor himself, QST Contributing Editor Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Hello, I'm Steve Ford, WB8IMY.
And I'm Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
And it's mailbag time, Joel.
Oh, good.
It never fails, it's mail. And let's start off with Bob, WA6MBL. And he asks, I've gotten bored with satellites. Really? Well, anyway. And I think it's time to spend more money and try something new. Now, that's the spirit. So now I'm on to PSK31. I have the required HF transceiver, digital interface, and a Windows 10 computer. I need to decide which software to use. FLDigi and DigiPan both look the same to me. Which one is best for the beginner? Please pick one, Joel. He's asking you to pick one.
Okay, well, it's been quite a while since I used PSK31. And when I used DigiPan, which was kind of the original software that I was aware of that came out about the time PSK31 was developed. And I found it worked quite well and did everything I needed. I haven't tried FLDigi, so I really can't comment on that one. But I sent your query over to QSD editor Steve Ford, whom I was sure had used both, and indeed he had. And he recommended that you also consider using DigiPan because you're a beginner. He notes that while FLDigi is a terrific program, it supports many different digital modes, and that means it's more complex to use. Both programs are free, so you can start with DigiPan and move to FLDigi when you want to explore new modes. And I should mention that a nice feature of setting up for PSK, and you'll be very glad you did this, is that the very same connections and sound card interface and all that kind of stuff is what you need to do almost all, I think, I always hesitate to say all, but I think almost all digital modes, as well as some analog ones like SlowScan TV and Hellschreiber. So you'll also be set up for RTTY, Teletype, and the various Joe Taylor weak signal programs are becoming very popular. There's been some articles in QST recently about FT8, which does marvelously good things for working on poor bands with people all over the world. Just load the different software and you're ready to go. One thing I should mention about Windows 10, by the way, that caught me, is it used to be on Windows that you could set the clock to be in synchronous with the National Bureau of Standards very easily right from the front main window.
Yes.
Not anymore. One of their improvements is that they've hidden that back in the settings area. And it's very important for FT8. If the clocks are not in sync, FT8 just won't work. And I find that quite surprising. So I actually took made a desktop icon for the settings so I can get to it fairly quickly. And before you try FT8 or any of the other WSGT programs, make sure that your computer that its clock is in sync with the National Bureau of Standards. Otherwise, it won't work.
And there's third-party software out there that you can run under Windows that will keep your computer in sync. Uh-huh. And another thing that I've tried that has worked well for me with Windows 10, you know, you mentioned settings. If you go in there, there's a little slide switch that basically states, and I won't quote this accurately, but allow Windows to set time automatically, something like that. If you slide that left to the off position, wait a couple of seconds, slide it back right to automatic, it forces Windows to go out there and synchronize itself. That has always worked well for me. I'll do that, and then I get on the air, and I'm fine.
I saw that. I guess I always hesitate to let the computer decide when to do things. And I found that if you go deep enough into the settings arena, you can actually come up with the same screen you used to get by clicking on the clock.
Yes.
And setting internet time, and you can force it. You say, just do it.
It is buried in there. That is true. But no, you make a good point about DigiPan. It is not as complex and full-featured as FLDigi and some of the other programs. It is certainly not multi-mode, except that it will do PSK63, for example. But it is easy to use, which is why I often recommend it for beginners. Very easy to use. And then once you're comfortable with that, step up to something more complex and more featured, or full-featured rather, such as FL Digi, for example.
But don't get rid of the icon for the
no.
DigiCam, just in case you want to drop back.
Keep that handy, yes. Our next question is from Robert, KG5RPC, and he asks, I'm very new to amateur radio, and I have many questions. I have a handheld VHF transceiver, but I don't know what to do first. I listen, but don't hear much, as I scan all the covered frequencies. Who can help with this? Where should he start, Joel? He also wonders, would he do better with a base station, and if so, should he build one? What do you think?
Well, I think you wonder where you can go for help for this, and this is a very frequent question, and in my opinion, it's very unfortunate that many groups that recruit people into the amateur radio ranks seem to be better at helping people get licensed than helping them figure out what to do after they get their license.
Absolutely.
In my opinion, usually the best place to go is a local radio club, if you have one. I looked up your call, and I found your location to be in the Houston area, and there are 9 clubs listed there, so there's likely to be some that are, some are regional clubs, some are special interests, and some are probably inactive, but you probably can find some club that is active that has people that can help you. And the way to find the clubs in your area is look on the ARL website at www.arl.org/findaclub with hyphens between the two words. And that'll give you a list of the clubs in your area. And then if you need to find, they'll have a contact there. If you don't have an email address, you can look them up on qrz.com using their call letters. You'll find out their address and so forth, and you can try to make contact with somebody in the club. See if they can help you. You'll find many clubs have regular nets of scheduled get-togethers on local repeaters that you can use, and you're much more likely to find people to talk to that way than just kind of randomly looking across the band, because there's an awful lot of frequencies, and most of them at any given moment are not in use. So in some areas are much more active on 2 meters than others. Start with finding a club and getting some help from the people there. And while you're at it, many of the clubs are in the process of planning their field day participation. That's an ARL-sponsored operating event that takes place on the fourth weekend in June. And it's a great way to have significant exposure to different equipment, other hams, and get interested in all kinds of different operations, because you'll see a lot of things that go well beyond what happens on your 2-meter handheld frequencies. And as to having a base station, yes, you'll likely be much happier with something more than your handheld radio. Handheld transceivers are very useful for short-range line-of-sight work, and they're very handy to have in public service events, helping people organize races and marches and things like that, keeping track of people, helping support medical providers at those things. But when you're working at home, a base station, and especially a better and higher antenna, will make all the difference in how far you can reach out with your radio. Now, the good news is that you can easily upgrade your station that you have. Your handheld can become a pretty effective base station. Typically, they put out up to 5 watts these days in that region. If you have an outside antenna or even a better inside antenna, it can make a difference. A magnetic mount on the refrigerator or on a file cabinet will work far better than the short, flexible whip on your handheld. And what you can do is you can also get a speaker mic. That way you can put the radio down and just hold the mic, and it'd be just almost like a base station. So, and you know, once you get started with that, then you can perhaps move to an outside antenna, which will get you even further. Now, if you're so inclined, if you really want to be serious about a base station, I recommend, rather than spending money on a VHF FM only transceiver for the base station, spend just a little more. I got a radio that can operate on the VHF bands with FM like you're doing with your handheld, but also operate on single sideband and particularly on the HF bands, shortwave bands. Your tech license will allow you to operate on 10 meters in single sideband and CW, as well as on 80, 40, and 15 meters using CW. Or you can operate single sideband on the VHF bands as well, or CW or digital modes, and open up all kinds of new worlds. There's a whole bunch of different kinds of operation that happen. If you start listening on 10 meters, you'll find that you don't hear a lot much of the time, and that's because the sunspots are not currently favorable and not making propagation via the ionosphere happen on 10 meters very well. But it still happens sometimes. There are trans-equatorial contacts to Central and South America, which happen fairly frequently, and there are other medium-haul, 1,000-mile contacts that you can make using sporadic ELAIR propagation. This happens fairly frequently, and you can listen for beacon stations around the country and around the world to find out when the band is open and get on there, maybe talk to somebody at long distances. But have faith, someday you'll be able to talk to people all over the world very easily on 10 meters. It's just not going to be anytime real soon. But you can still listen to hams using single sideband on the lower frequency bands until you get your next license that allows you to talk there. Right now, ICOM, Kenwood, and Yaesu all offer transceivers that provide coverage on the HF bands with SSB and CW and digital modes, as well as on VHF, so that's my recommendation for a base station. There are also a lot of earlier radios around that offer similar band coverage, perhaps with older technology, but available for attractive prices. So I hope that helps and you find amateur radio as interesting as I have over many years.
I have a comment for Robert, too, but before I do, let's take a break and hear from DX Engineering.
Remember your first contact? The excitement of that first CQ? The exhilaration of making your first QSO? At DX Engineering, we know that feeling too. That's why we've committed to making your on-air experience the very best it can be. DX Engineering ships quickly, which means less station downtime. And we have free shipping for almost any order over $99. We've recently expanded our inventory, so you don't have to wait for the gear you need. DX Engineering has introduced all new radio products and revived legendary brands, all with the goal of helping you enjoy amateur radio. Most importantly, the DX Engineering team is here to help you. You've got a team of highly experienced hams ready to work out technical issues, answer questions, and help you optimize your station performance. That excitement you felt from the first contact, it can happen again and again with help from DX Engineering. DXEngineering.com. That's DXEngineering.com.
And we're back. And before we go on to the next question, Joel, I had a comment for, as I said, for Robert as well. And that is regarding the clubs. Go to a club meeting. And even though you'll be a stranger there, just listen, sit there, try to meet some of the people that are there. And perhaps try to pick a club that is into public service activities or contesting and volunteer your help, because they're always looking for people to participate and operate in the next contest or the next public service event. And the more you get integrated into that club, you cease being a stranger and you start to become somebody that people know. And the next time that you happen to be on the repeater and you say that you're monitoring, somebody is more likely to come back to you because they know you.
That's a good point. That's a very good point.
Yeah, just make yourself known, basically.
Yep.
Well, Joel, we have our last question here. And this is from Rich, K1OF. And he asks, I bet in all your years in amateur radio, your many, many years, Joel, the accuracy of the output impedance of your rig was something you didn't think much about. Before solid-state rigs with so-called specified output impedances of 50 ohms, the output impedance was usually specified as a range of impedances that your Pi network could match. The question is, how accurate is the manufacturer's 50-ohm value that we all take for granted?
Well, that's a good question. And let's see, to go back to the earlier one, how many years is that? I think I'm coming up with 63. I got my first license when I was 2.
Oh, many, many years. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, well, it's interesting, and I guess the manufacturers don't actually say that the output impedance of the transmitter is 50 ohms. At least I've never seen one that said that. If you read the fine print, what it says is they are designed to provide power to a load that is 50 ohms within some standing wave ratio range or some impedance range. And that's a little bit different because what you really want to do is you want to drive that load and put power into it. And it doesn't really matter to you, or shouldn't matter too much, about the interior design details of the transmitter. So, for example, the transmitter could actually act like a current source, so it could put more and more current in than it would if it had a 50-ohm impedance, output impedance. There's kind of an interesting caveat or side story to that. It may well be that the transmitter can actually put more power into a different load than it can into 50 ohms. Not a lot of people...
Really?
Yeah, that's true. And how do you find that out? Instead of looking at an SWR meter, I'm not recommending you do this, which I'll tell you about in a minute, but I'm telling you what you could do.
This is dangerous, isn't it?
It is a little bit dangerous. Well, we had an article about this. So the 170,000 people who read the article are in the same boat as anybody that hears it here. And that is, if you put a RF ammeter in the line to the antenna, if you have a 50-ohm antenna, let's say, and you use an antenna tuner to adjust the impedance that the transmitter sees, you may find that you measure it, the current going to the antenna with the tuner set for a 1-to-1 SWR, so it's a 50-ohm load, and that'll give you one current. Now, it's possible if you change the antenna tuner settings, you'll actually get more current, which means you'll put more power into the load. And somebody says, oh, my 100-watt transmitter can put out 147 watts or whatever it can do. But what's the story here? This is not a good idea. The transmitter can put out more power than it's rated. Like, well, your car can go faster than the speed limit. Well, maybe that's not a good idea at all times. So what happens is, if you do that, you're actually going to be dissipating more power in the transmitter. You're drawing more current. You probably don't have any more voltage, but you have more current going through the final amplifier transistors and probably exceeding their rated dissipation, which means you will have to find new output transistors or somebody to repair your radio, because you'll eventually melt them. I mean, this is what happens. So the important thing is not what the interior circuitry of the transmitter is. The important thing is what impedance the transmitter is designed to drive. Even though driving a lower impedance may result in a higher output power, it'll also result in final amplifier collector current being higher than the ratings. So it's always better for the life of the equipment to operate transmitters within their ratings. And therefore the actual output impedance per se of the transmitter has no impact on what's actually happening here. What's important is what impedance it's designed to drive.
That makes perfect sense. Thank you, Joel.
My pleasure.
ARRL, The Doctor Is In, is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. For more information on amateur radio or the ARRL, visit us on the web at www.arrl.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for ARRL. If you have a question or comment for the doctor, send an email to doctor@arrl.org. Background music is courtesy of Ben Sound at www.bensound.com. This program is provided under the copyright of the ARRL. Until next time, I'm QST Managing Editor Becky Schoenfeld, W1BXY 73, and thanks for listening.